What I do is go back to the accounts of the original contactees of the 1950s, because we know for a fact that somewhere in the mid 1950s, the government and the military became concerned with about the massive public interest in the stories of especially George Adamski, but the others in the United States in any case as well. Because they were asked by their contacts from space to inform humanity that life is one and that we need to learn to live as one on this planet, lest we destroy ourselves. And of course, we have to remember this was in the midst of the Cold War with the standoff between the West and the East, the West led by the United States and the East Bloc under the Soviet Union. And there was a massive, if only psychological, threat of nuclear war, and there was actually a threat of nuclear annihilation. So the message from the from space, from the space people, was quite urgent, asking us to relinquish our atomic weapons and technology, and try to find a basis for international cooperation. Until fairly recently, not considered seriously anymore by any UFO researchers.
And that was a foretaste of this episode of the Planetary Makeover Show. In today's episode, Gerard Artson reveals how verified UFO contacts affirm their mission of love to work with us to transform our planet into one that really does work for everyone. In response to the growing voices of an awakening humanity, we bring you evidence that divine help is at hand to work with us to create a hopeful future that works for everyone.
Hello, I'm your host, David Minot II, and I'd like to introduce a show that we produced back in 2015. The subject was one of the most mesmerizing topics on the planet, UFOs, or UAPs, if you like, unidentified aerial phenomena, as they have been referred to as of late. You'll see host Silito Pascual on the show Share on the Air Radio interviewing Gerard Artson from the Netherlands, an author and educator who has deeply studied, investigated, and researched the topic of flying saucers, as they were referred to in the mid-20th century. Now, the sight of otherworldly craft in our skies may go back to humanity's origins, but today it's helping form a bridge into humanity's future while maintaining and incorporating ideals which stem from humanity's long-held philosophical and religious traditions. Now, George has written 6 books on the topic of UFOs, and he's edited 2 more by and about George Adamski, who is perhaps the 20th century's most celebrated contactee of extraterrestrials. And around the time Gerard began writing his books, myself and millions around the globe began noticing this star-like luminary, as it has been referred to, in the upper atmosphere and began snapping pictures of it. On this episode, Gerard and Silito will help put all these events into context for us, both within present-day world events, and recent history. Going back to the 1940s, world leaders, statesmen, ex-military, and people from all walks of life have proclaimed that they have witnessed these crafts, and in some cases, even made verified contact with the inhabitants, or I should say the occupants, of those craft. And they were quite human. That's right, they look like us, and they are from the adjacent planets in our own solar system, not from some far-off galaxy. All of this brings us up, of course, to the present day, this era, the most pivotal in mankind's history. So let's go ahead and view the interview, and you can decide for yourselves.
We have a fantastic show today. And before we start with that, if you're listening for the first time, we have listeners all over the world. So welcome to our newcomers. The premise of this show is that humanity is not alone, that we have always had help of an extraordinary kind from a group of elder siblings of humanity, perfected humans who have guided humanity's evolution for eon upon eon. They are spiritual beings, very straightforward, simple, totally respectful in their approach to humanity, and they are emerging into the modern world today. At the head of this group, the most senior member of this extraordinary group of perfected spiritual beings is the world teacher for all humanity, the eldest brother of the human race, Maitreya, the world teacher. And he is emerging into the modern world because we are at a very important transition point in a cosmic cycle. We are at the dawn of a new cosmic cycle. And as has happened before throughout human history, divine messengers have stepped forward at critical points. Krishna, Buddha, Confucius, Jesus, and Muhammad. And so Maitreya is emerging into the world today, not as a religious leader, but as a guide and teacher to help us find our way out of the tremendous the mess we find our world in, the climate mess, the economic disparities. And so all of this ties into another big topic, which is the topic of UFOs and our space brothers. So I'm very pleased to introduce our guest. His name is Gerard Ardson. He has a Master of Education degree from Amsterdam University, where he has held a teaching position in the School of Education for the past 15 years or so. And Gerard Ardson is also a student of the Ageless Wisdom Teachings. He has published 3 books on the topic of UFOs and space brothers, and we're going to find out why is this connected to this story of the emergence of the Masters of Wisdom. All of this is interrelated. Gerard, thank you for being on the show. Welcome.
Hello, Shilito. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it is 1 o'clock in Seattle, so that means it's much later in Amsterdam, so I appreciate you staying up past your bedtime. Tell us, let's start with one question. How did you first come across the Ageless Wisdom Teachings that talk about the Masters of Wisdom?
I was still very young. I was almost, not entirely, but almost fresh out of school, high school. And I had bought my first book by Alice Ann Bailey, who is one of the main exponents of the Ageless Wisdom Teachings, as they have been published in modern times, starting with Madame Blavatsky around 1875, who founded the Theosophical Society and published some very important works. Alice Ann Bailey expanded on the work done by Madame Blavatsky. And I was around 20 years old, I think, when I bought a book by Alice Bailey And I found it quite fascinating. And not long after that, I came across the first ever interview with Benjamin Graham, who is, as you well know, the source of the information about the return to the world of the world teacher and the masters of wisdom in the actual practical sense of his arrival in the modern world in 1977. That was so shortly after I bought that Alice and read the Alice Bailey book, I came across his first interview in a Dutch magazine, a New Age magazine, and that made every sense to me in terms of answers I was looking for to the world's problems. And and it clicked with me right away. So that was 1978, and I contacted the group here in Holland that was soon to invite him for his first lecture outside the UK. And that's where it all started for me.
And of course, Benjamin Graham is the chief editor of Share International magazine, and he has a dozen and a half books that you can find on Amazon, his first book being The Reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of Wisdom. So, Gerard, let's fast forward a little bit. How did you come to be interested in the topic of UFOs?
Well, let's rewind a little bit. You just mentioned Benjamin Graham's first book, The Reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of Wisdom. On the very first page of his very first book, he mentions the important role of the Space Brothers in building the spiritual platform for the reappearance of the Elder Brothers of Humanity, the Masters of Wisdom and the World Teacher at their head. So that from page one in the very first book that he wrote is made it very clear, but also very fascinating, because I had heard of and read one of the books by George Adamski, who was not only one of the early contactees of the 1950s, but he was one of the main contactees of the 1950s in the sense that he always stuck to his story. He never wavered from the facts, even in the face of intimidation or attempts to bribe him to say that it was all a fabrication, etc. He always stayed true to what he knew, and that is that the flying saucers, UFOs as we call them now, are visitors visiting from other planets in our solar system, as has also always been confirmed by Benjamin Graham and his master, mainly from Venus and Mars, some from Jupiter and Saturn and a few other planets.
And he came across that information how? He has
George Adamski.
George Adamski. He's written some amazing books, and I'm just thinking for a moment, he also was a student of the Ageless Wisdom teaching. So all of this is interconnected as far as information. And how did he come to first start, you know, what launched his interest to where apparently he traveled the world and had audiences numbering into the multiple hundreds, if not thousands?
Exactly, yes. Well, the official story is that he was first contacted in November 1952 when he and a group of friends, based on a hunch that he had, drove into the desert in California. At one point, he asked his friend to stop the car. He got out and walked a bit of a distance into, well, the foothills, and his friends from a distance saw a saucer landing and a person stepping out. And the person and Adamski obviously talked for a while. And Adamski wrote about this in his part of the book, Flying Saucers Have Landed, which caused quite a stir when it first appeared in 1953.
I want to make an interesting point, because I read that book. And they didn't just come out of the sky. It's not like he had this thought and said, come on, guys, let's get in the car and drive. He had been photographing the night sky for 2 years with no success, apparently, before that contact.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that correct?
He had published his first photographs already in Fate magazine, for instance, and he was, even in 1946 or 1949, he had published a pamphlet called The Possibility of Life on Other Planets. And according to the George Adamski Foundation, he had contacts, and which confirms my suspicions. He had contacts long before 1952, and he actually wrote about those contacts in another book, Pioneers of Space, that was published in 1949. Yeah, eventually it was published. It seems he had great difficulty getting it published, and he found someone who would publish it as long as he would call it science fiction.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
But as I document in my first book, Adamski was actually tutored and guided by Space Brothers as a teenager.
And we're talking about the Space Brothers, their work, their mission, and why we're seeing so many visitations by craft, or we're witnessing them in the skies to a much more dramatic effect. Every day there seems to be something online posted, a video or images. It seems like a lot of activity that cannot be explained by anything that we know of. So, Gerard, we were talking about Adamski. You had discovered Benjamin Krem's writings. You also discovered Adamski's writings and saw how the two dovetailed. You have been a student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings for many, many years, and in a matter of time, your interest really deepened. You just published a new book. You've published three books on UFOs. Your most latest book is Priorities for a Planet in Transition, The Space Brothers Case for Justice and Freedom. And I love this book because you very elegantly weave together a lot of previously documented information, published information, and you show the correspondences between the testimony of contactees with the story that Benjamin Krem has been putting forth through his books about the Masters of Wisdom. Pretty complex effort, and you've done it so well. Prior to that, you published Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers. And both books have wonderful photographs and just compelling images that I never knew existed. How did you... There's so much information out there about UFOs, a ton, and people make a lot of money on the topic because it's very popular. How did you select the information that you wanted to include in your books?
What I do is go back to the accounts of the original contactees of the 1950s, because we know for a fact that somewhere in the mid-1950s, the government and the military became concerned about the massive public interest in the stories of especially George Adamski, but the others in the United States in any case as well. Because they were asked by their contacts from space to inform humanity that life is one and that we need to learn to live as one on this planet, lest we destroy ourselves. And, of course, we have to remember this was in the midst of the Cold War, with the standoff between the West and the East, the West led by the United States and the East Bloc under the Soviet Union. And there was a massive, if only psychological, threat of nuclear war, and there was actually a threat of nuclear annihilation. So the message from the space people was quite urgent, asking us to relinquish our atomic weapons and technology, and try to find a basis for international cooperation. This message gained so much interest and popularity that which of course went against the national interests of the Western countries and the Eastern countries. For what we know in the West, they were actively debunked and ridiculed and defamed. And lots of disinformation was fed into the public through contactees or alleged contactees or whistleblowers to ridicule this whole story of visitors from space. So what I do is I look, first of all, at the accounts from before this disinformation campaign started. I look for similarities in the accounts so that there's a good reason to accept that certain facts in the accounts have been corroborated by others, have been seen or told to others, and from there you can extrapolate and find in the accounts of later contactees which parts correspond or not. So then you have a fairly solid body and quite extensive, I might add, about. You know, the purpose for the extraterrestrial visits and their intentions. So it's quite simple what I do, but you have to go through those early works, which were actually until fairly recently not considered seriously anymore by any UFO researchers,
and so largely almost forgotten. If no one's giving it attention, you know, new generation comes about and no one knows that those books exist. And
exactly. So
it's wonderful that you are bringing all this forward. You know, when we think of contactees, when I think of contactees, I picture a remote road at the foot of the mountains in the woods, one driver, you know, blinded by light and having to get out of the car and whatnot. But actually, there are cases where many people were in interaction with our space brothers over a considerable amount of time. We're not talking about just a remote situation or a one-off situation, and that would include the friendship case as being a very interesting interaction. Can you talk about that?
Yes, you're referring to the Amicizia case in Italy, and more importantly, or equally importantly, not only were over 120 Italians involved in that case from 1956 onward, which started in the region of Pescara in Italy, on the east coast, but many of them were also very high-ranking, you know, or well-known social figures. For instance, a very well-known person was a consul, a career diplomat, Alberto Perego, who himself wrote several books documenting sightings and etc. He didn't really write about his involvement in the friendship case, but he was clearly dedicated to making known the reality of the visitors from space and collecting media, newspaper reports, etc. in his books. That was one example. Several professors were involved. One particularly, Bruno Samesiccia, whose story was the basis for the book Mass Contacts that appeared in English, translated in English in, I believe, 2009. And he was a psychologist and a theologian. There was an artist involved. And these were people, most of them, in comparison to many of the more well-known contactee cases, um, very often, you know, involved just one individual, although there would be witnesses. These people in the Friendship case were not so much invited on board flying saucers or motherships for trips around the planet or into the solar system, but into their underground bases, which were scattered around Italy, and according to accounts from people in other branches of the Friendship case around Europe and Russia, in the rest of the European continent as well. So they were invited into not by the hundreds, but in small groups, into the underground bases. Sometimes they haven't been very specific about what they were taught, but again, in their accounts, they point out the main message from the people from space, which is, we are one human race on this planet, but throughout cosmos as well. And we are our brother's keeper. We have to look after each other. And it's very interesting to see that they are bringing the same message as the not only the Age's Wisdom teachings, but also the major religions on Earth, which of course are representations, more or less correct, of the wisdom teachings.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a simple message, and yet here we are today, really, we don't know how much longer we're going to last on this planet. It seems quite perilous right now. So I want to get the conversation started before our break a little bit about getting our mind around what that means to relinquish our weapons. You know, there's such an industry, the military and the oil industry, so deeply entrenched into every aspect of our lives and our consciousness even. So in your book, Priorities for a Planet in Transition, you actually describe, you have the compilation of the testimony of contactees describing the economic systems and how they function on other planets, where people work 1 to 3 hours a day at the maximum, and are able to use the rest of the time for study, education, travel, being of service, doing things that are meaningful. They're not stuck in traffic the way we are. From that mundane aspect of our life on up, I think sometimes I wonder if we are a little hesitant to know about our space brothers because we're worried they're going to, like, yeah, we got it better than you guys. You guys are messed up. Maybe we're concerned about being judged a bit. What's another way to perceive why they're here without fear? So, Gerard, I asked a convoluted question, and I guess the simplest way to ask it is how for those who are so, you know, the disinformation that began in the 50s into the 60s and was really successful because then the media integrated those ideas into movies and TV shows, you know, Little Green Men. We are quite thoroughly conditioned to feel a sense of great hesitation around the topic. And I can sense that when I post things on my Facebook page. What would you like to illuminate for those of us who are questioning this? You know, why should we know about the Space Brothers? Questioning the idea of acknowledging this information.
Well, I don't know if I can, you know, I don't see it as my task to try and convince people that the extraterrestrial presence on Earth is real. There has been such a wealth of evidence, accounts from people from throughout, you know, all social strata, across the world, people who want to deny it clearly have a problem with broadening their worldview, and you can't really blame people. The space brothers, the space people, respect our free will and our right to deny the obvious. So they will not force their presence on us. They have been contacting people. They have been here for millennia, for as long as humanity has existed on this planet. There's historical records, even in the old scriptures, the Bible and the Bhagavad or the Mahabharata, the Indian scriptures. So, you have to want to know it, and you have to want to be aware of the extraterrestrial presence, and otherwise you're probably steeped in the reductionist, materialistic view of life that really characterizes much of mainstream science today. But what I think is important to take away from the awareness that they are here is the fact that they not only subscribe to, but they really, their presence and the way they go about contacting us and teaching us or informing us about the necessities of life, the spiritual realities of life, shows how much they are in concert with the wisdom teachings, respect for humanity's free will, the need for acting on a realization of our brotherhood, the fact that we are one human race, that everything in cosmos is interrelated, and that we have to put those things into practice. They're not just beautiful platitudes or thoughts that we can contemplate on sitting by our candle and an incense stick. We have to put them into practice in our daily lives, in the way we relate to our neighbors, our physical neighbors, but also our more figuratively, people in other countries, people who have to flee war zones or zones of economic oppression for a better life or for prospects for their children. And, before the break, you mentioned arms, weapons, etc. These industries exist and flourish because of this ingrained, deeply ingrained sense of competition. We have built our structures in our world today on greed and competition. Those are the two driving forces, it seems, in our world, in our daily lives. We've even allowed political systems to get to the point where we now have to compete for jobs at the lowest possible wages, below living wage level, and we have to realize that is in effect our own doing through governments that we have voted for or we haven't voted for, for lack of interest or lack of participation or sense of the need to participate. And we have to reconnect with the fact that we are the directors of our own lives, and that's what the world teacher and the masters and the space people are here to show us. Unless we act, nothing will change. It will only get worse, because the people who are in power are the people who have the power and have the money to mold and shape the systems to their own advantage. So we have to, if we want justice and freedom, we will have to stand up for it.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, what is your, you open up a whole big realm of questions, but I'm thinking of what the average person might be thinking. They're probably wondering, have you been contacted by a space brother or two?
Not knowingly.
No.
I mean, I'm not aware of having been contacted, and I doubt that I have, in fact. And also, if you look at the wealth of information that's been available since the 1950s, and unfortunately has been ignored for the most part, I really don't see a need for me to be contacted. All I needed was to find the right books, and have a critical look at what they were saying.
Mm-hmm. I was just about to look it up before we had to go online, but I remember you did publish an article in Share International. You've published a number of articles, an article about two world leaders who are speaking publicly about their interaction with Space Brothers. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Well, you know, most of my articles were used in some form or shape as the basis for chapters in my books, and I think you're referring to, for instance, Kirsan Ilyumzhinov, who was the president of the southern Russian state of Kalmykia until, I think, 2005 or 2010, don't remember exactly. He's also still the president of the World Chess Federation. And he was contacted in 1997, in September 1997, while he was in his apartment in Moscow. And he spent hours, according to his account, on a mothership where he was invited. And afterwards, he's been quite open to speak about the experience, of course, denounced and ridiculed by the media. But nevertheless, he's been quite forthcoming in answering reporters' questions. And the interesting fact is that his assistants and his driver were in his apartment upon his return, and they say he could not have come through the front door. They had checked his apartment already, and he was nowhere to be found, and he came back through the balcony, where he was also picked up of his apartment, which is on the, I believe, in the top floor of this particular building. So they suddenly saw him back in his apartment and were wondering, because they were just about to raise alarm about his absence, and they said, "How did you get back?" So and he had you know, only good things to say about his hosts from space, and he said, "They're people just like us. They think in the same way. They communicate in the same way." So that was a very rather high profile contactee. There have been others. In my new book, Priorities for a Planet in Transition, I document the case of Bulgarian professor Lahasar Filipov. And he was the deputy director of the Bulgarian Space Agency, Space Research Agency. And he bluntly stated that the extraterrestrials are here and they are more advanced than we are. We are not advanced enough yet to contact them, but they are here to help. Of course, he was, you know, in good academic tradition, he was stripped of his positions when he was so open about the information that he had obtained somehow. Mm-hmm. And another case that was, it has been known about since 2012, December 2012, is the former Russian president and current Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, who confirms that the Russians, and of course like the Americans and many other nations, have an active file that deals with the reality, the facts of the extraterrestrial visitors. In Russia.
So we have, obviously, and you say this on your website, you have a video of it, just a high-ranking official after high-ranking official saying they're, extraterrestrials are visiting this planet, and some of them are saying, "I've interacted with them." It's quite open, and it's quite out there. So there's nothing being hidden, which is rather remarkable. And yet there's this kind of this atmosphere of like, oh, there's something to disclose because things are being hidden. And you're saying that quite a few people have been quite candid and quite public at great risk.
Yes, well, there's plenty that has been hidden and been kept secret from the public, hidden from the public. Remarkably, many, many high-ranking individuals, dignitaries, have been speaking out over the past five, six decades, and As I've done before, you know, I've looked for their particular statements, the sources, and compiled this brief video compilation, and it's really a powerful statement of disclosure.
I'm looking at the latest issue of Share International magazine, the print issue, December this month, and on page 11, there's a four-page spread. It's amazing. Every issue has extraordinary images of Space Brothers craft manifesting in many different ways. Maybe our audience is familiar with the idea of UFO clouds. That's become quite familiar to people. The UFOs seem to be manifesting in very dramatic ways. I want to mention a photograph. A friend of mine, she's a photographer here in Seattle, Linda Hurst. She was photographing at about 5:30 in the morning, photographing the moon, took a picture. Wasn't anything remarkable, she knew, because it was blurry. But when she downloaded it to her computer, the series of five photos, she saw the image of an eye in the sky. And she posted it to Facebook. I immediately asked her if I could send that to the editors of Share International. And it was confirmed by Benjamin Krem's master that the eye in the sky was manifested by the Space Brothers. Gerard, why do you think, I think the average person would wonder, why are they doing all this dramatic stuff? Why can't they just, you know, let's get to it, you know, land, talk to us, you know, get on the airwaves, share your technology, help us clean up the environment. Why aren't they doing that?
Well, they are helping clean up the environment in ways that most of us and our scientists don't understand. But just remember the motion pictures, the movies. You know, the vast majority of movies coming out of Hollywood and elsewhere about extraterrestrials are about an alien threat. So when they would do a great big landing somewhere, imagine how many people would get a heart attack, just because it's so imbued in the human mind, in our thinking, that when they come, they must be dangerous, and in fact they are the opposite. And so they take great care not to cause that kind of scare and a number of deaths just by, you know, heart attacks and stuff like that. But their you know, their presence here is in support of this great event that you mentioned, the Day of Declaration. And so they are supporting the Masters of Wisdom who have been manifesting miracles, signs of all kinds, especially since the late 1980s, to prepare humanity, to give humanity hope, depending on their particular religious background, or for people of no particular religious background specifically, but in all kinds of ways to make people wonder and aware that there are higher realities in this life, and there's more to life than just the dreary day-to-day work and trying to pay the bills, etc. And that we are really on the verge of this momentous event where the world teacher, Maitreya by name, will reintroduce himself to humanity on a global scale. This time, not in one particular part of the world, as you know, historically happened, but to the whole world at once through a television, internet, radio broadcast, and giving humanity a tremendous, a profound experience of its oneness. So humanity needs to be prepared for this to the extent possible. We with Share International magazine, the groups that have been working with Benjamin Krem since he started his mission in 1974 around the world, you know, all kinds of people have tried to inform humanity, and of course we are several thousand, 3,000-4,000 people active in making this story known. So fortunately, we also get the help from the Masters and the Space Brothers, who try in every possible way, without infringing our free will, to alert humanity at large that there's something great afoot.
So on this, we talk about this Day of Declaration. We often run out of time on our show because our guests have so much to share. So I appreciate that you're talking about it. But it is very important to know that this is an unprecedented event for humanity. What you just described, this Maitreya presenting himself to all of humanity simultaneously, and apparently it will occur thanks to our satellite communications. Every person in the world will be who's near a television set or anything that transmits images will be able to see Maitreya. The world media will have organized this, and it is important for us to realize that we can invoke this event into happening sooner by us being aware of the story, being aware of all these miracle events. You can see that on the Share International, share-international.org. If you go there, bringing attention of these amazing UFO phenomena, amazing miracle phenomena to the media, bringing the story up about the Masters and Maitreya, that is really important for ordinary people to demand more information about this event.
You know what, if I may,
yes.
there's very interesting announcements and corroborations of the information coming from Benjamin Graham in accounts of some of the contactees. If in my previous book, for instance, I quote from the account of Giorgio Di Bitonto, an Italian contactee who was not directly, I believe, involved in the friendship case that we discussed, but who had his own experiences in 1980. And he was told that humanity will travel, this is quoting from his book, humanity will travel through a wilderness in comparison to which the one that the Hebrews overcame would seem like an oasis. Well, the wilderness that is referred to, we see around us now with the systems crumbling under our feet, you know, the impending economic and financial collapse. And they said, they told this Mr. Di Bitonto, the Hebrews were led by a great universal brother who was born here in order to fulfill this important mission. His name was Moses. You will be led by a new Moses, whom we all love and admire greatly. He will lead all the people on this new exodus, like a good brother or father. And there are several other hints to this huge event that awaits humanity, and that most of humanity, unfortunately, is not aware of.
My colleague Diana Gold-Holland interviewed the journalist Patricia Pichon, who described some extraordinarily amazing, beautiful experiences that she had directly with interacting with Maitreya. I think she describes about three events, and she describes different kinds of very deep, blissful experiences of love just from connecting her gaze with Maitreya. What she describes is quite interesting, and she also describes having been in contact with another journalist, in Nairobi, who witnessed Maitreya appearing to thousands of people at a healing event many years back. It was reported on CNN. So it's a challenge to get the mind around it a bit, but also it makes perfect sense that at this time a great teacher is stepping forward where humanity finds itself in crisis, ready to guide and inspire us forward. And to further describe this event of Day of Declaration, we will see Maitreya on television, but we will not hear him with our ears speaking. We will hear his message in our head, in our own language, and Maitreya will present to humanity a choice whether to continue as we are going in the modes that we're living under, greed and competition, or to choose differently, to choose sharing and cooperation as the way to repair the world. In fact, I'll share a message very quickly from Maitreya, message number 126. Make it your task, then, to teach the law of sharing, of justice and truth. Help men to realize that without justice and manifested love, all else is as naught. Mankind stands on the threshold of this discovery of truth. My presence among you guarantees that this is so. Do you have any final words, Gerard, before we sign off about the Space Brothers and Maitreya?
Well, yes. I think the message that you just read sums it up, and it coincides with the message from the space people that I've presented in my latest book. We have to make it work. We have to make it reality. We have to stand up for justice and freedom, for what is right, to repair what is wrong in this world.
If you are enjoying what you're hearing, you can follow Gerard on Facebook. If you do a search, Gerard Artson, Priorities for a Planet in Transition, you'll find his website and links to just a wealth of information, not just on UFOs and Space Brothers, but on the Ageless Wisdom teachings, the many different authors that are covering that topic. You'll find tremendous information to follow up on.
Thank you, Celito Pascual and Gerard Artson, for demonstrating how relevant this subject remains. At our website, www.planetarymakeover.org, that's www.planetarymakeover.org, you can view more of our wonderful UFO-related shows. And beyond that, how comforting it is to know that our Space Brothers are on and about our planet, not just sightseeing, but actually on a mission to help humanity save itself and make it through the many crises that plague us today, so that we can usher in an incredible new era of enlightenment, peace, justice, and brotherhood. And who knows? Once humanity's demonstrated a modicum of maturity, perhaps our space brethren will again land, step out, and greet us as they did George Adamski, all those years ago. Well, I can dream, as can we all. Dream and act. As the world teacher once put it, nothing happens by itself. Mankind must act and implement his will. I want to thank you for watching us, and we hope to see you back here again soon. Goodbye for now. Visit us on Facebook at #PlanetaryMakeover. This show has been a production of PlanetaryMakeover.org.
We invite you to visit Planetary Makeover on YouTube, where we have dozens of fascinating shows in line with what you've just seen.
For more background information, visit www.shareinternational-west.org. For related books, DVDs, and CDs by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the world teacher Maitreya, please go to share-ecart.com.